May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Qook audio podcast. Today, a life in Bali. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So, today we have a guest on Life in Bali, John Dobinson. I know him from here in Bali, of course. He and his wife have been coming here for a long time, 25 years. And so we talk about that. We talk about various things. Look. Let's just give John a call and see what's up. Look, toward the end, it starts breaking up, you know. So there's not a good, clean goodbye. Anyway, that's showbiz. Okay, here we go.
Hello, David.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Okay. What have you been up to?
Oh, just more of the same. Working on websites and podcasts. A lot of podcasts since I saw you last. I did an audio book.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, doing music, a lot of music. Anyway, like that.
You've been busy.
Yeah, busy. So, I haven't seen you in a couple of years.
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, it's been like all of us, it's with this COVID. It's luckily nobody in our family or no friends have been affected physically by it. But it's certainly been a tough time for a lot of people, a lot of businesses down here. And I think Melbourne, where I am, of course, in Australia. It's one of those places that has the record of the longest lockdown of anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, Australia is serious.
That locked everything down. Yeah. So it's made a big difference. So I've been booking when they say, oh, it's going to open up. They said it was going to open up in September, so I booked up September, then November, and now I've booked three, actually, to come back and get back to Bali. So if one dies, the other one comes up, and I just roll them over. So February now.
You're trying February?
Yeah, February 5, and we'll be going to Sanur, of course, and we thought, well, we'll hopefully get there this time. We'll see what transpires with, of course, there's the two sides, leaving Australia and coming back, and also the entry to Bali. It was looking really good. They were quarantining down to 2 days, I think. But
right.
Now they've stretched it out to 7 days, I believe. You might be able to elaborate on that.
It was 10 days the other day. And it's really unnecessary. I read some about this Omicron. It's very mild, and South Africa they haven't put any big restrictions because of it. I just read the head of their medical association said not one single person had gone to the hospital, and said that everybody around the world is way overreacting to it.
That's fantastic. That's good for everybody, but particularly for Bali, for the locals who have been suffering so much.
Years,
I suspect.
Yeah.
Well, I know. But, you know, we've been supporting families and also organisations over there that are dispersing food and the like.
That's right. We've been involved with that.
Kaduli. I thought you might have a and in.
Yeah, Australia's had the strictest quarantine I've seen. You know, they didn't let people leave or come back, Australians, for the longest time.
Yes, yeah, very, very. Look, it gave us a glimpse of, particularly in the state that I'm living, to being in a communist society. You know, we could get to 9 o'clock at night. There was a curfew. You couldn't go out. The helicopters are going overhead and following the cars to see, you know, whether they've got a bona fide reason for being out. And police cars cruising around. And, no, it's really a terrible feeling to live in that environment. You know, along with everything else, but when it comes to masks, you know, after being in Bali for a while and Southeast Asia on many occasions, I don't think twice about us, you know, because out on the bicycle or the like, I find that the pollution's a bit of a problem at times. And so I think of COVID a little bit like that. So by wearing a mask, if it stops me from getting it, and so be it. And then distancing, I like to shake hands with a knuckle. Or not the elbows, that's a bit, but, you know, we just shake hands with meeting like a little punch with the knuckles and touch that way, and that's our shake hands around the area. But I've had my two injections, so double vaccinated, and today just looking for the third one. I've got two AstraZeneca, the English one, and now I've got the option today when I researched it from one from a doctor. I can get Pfizer and the other one I can get Moderna from a chemist pharmacy. So I thought, I've got the option of which one, so I'll gauge which one has the best responses. Either of them are pretty good anyway.
Oh, they're both good. I'd take Moderna. Yeah. We're in the same situation as you. We've had both AstraZeneca, and I think the third one will be available in January or February here. When did you first come to Bali?
I was a bit of a late starter. I thought, sometimes your own backyard, you think, I'll be able to get up there later on. From Australia or anywhere we travel is usually huge distances, as you know, whether it be to other parts of the world. And so I thought, I'll go to Bali later. So really we didn't start going there until, I reckon about, for us, about 20 years, 25 years ago, 25 years ago.
And that's a late starter. This is 25 years ago. Yeah. That's about 1996.
Yeah, that's about that time we thought, we discovered Bali and said, this is a great spot, you know. And we were lucky enough to, we started off on the Kuta, and then that we thought, this is too razzmatazz. I don't like this. Then we went to Legian. But in the meantime, we've discovered Candidasa up on the coast, and we used to spend quite a bit of time up there. And then we discovered Sanua. And Sanua is now our base, and we find where it suits all of our purposes. We enjoy the people, and, there's, some friends as yourselves that we've made in the area, of course, and we find that we feel very comfortable there, very safe, and really miss our time there and our friends there. Yeah, that's how it's been about. Yeah.
You've also been around a lot of the other islands. You've taken boats all around. Can you? I remember you telling me about that. It was really, I was envious. I thought, that would be great. And you've done it more than once, and you did it long ago. And you talked about what you'd seen happen to the coral reefs.
Yes, yeah, that was devastating to see the coral reefs, the effect there. A lot of we travelled, you know, on a boat. One boat went across the Northern Islands and of Indonesia, and ended up going from all the way over to PNG, over to Papua. And then we went down to Port Moresby from there and left from there. So right along the top islands, and they were wonderful, very, very quiet and very relaxing, but little atolls and then larger populations. And we'd call in on the boat and we'd be introduced to the king of the island, and they'd have all their fine silk clothes on and all the rest of it, because we were one of the few small ships to call in there, or small boats, but really that's getting towards ships we went on. And one time we went to 21 islands across the top.
Can you name any of the islands?
Oh, well, you know, of course, Sulawesi, there's, you know, that's very good. And that was a highlight. That's the one that's got all, like a spider, that has many, many ridges and the like around it. And Papua was very interesting. And it's booming there. It's the economy, with there's a lot of mining there and the like. So you're out in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly you see these high-rise buildings and a small modern city. And so that's a bit of a surprise. And there's, of course, getting to Komodo with the dragons. That's very interesting. What the reflection is there, just past Bali, you're probably aware that the Wallace Line is the geographical meeting of two continents. And so you've got the two continents there being the Western and the Eastern. And the Western is the more tropical, like Bali, of course, and Java and Sumatra. And on the Eastern, you go into the dry Australian climate. And I was surprised, even on the Indonesian islands.
What are the names of the places in the Eastern?
Well, that's going down through the...
You're talking about, well, Lombok is east.
Starts at Lombok, and there's a little bit of, that's where the line is, not far from Lombok. There's just so many little islands, but Komodo, of course, and then there's
Flores.
Flores, of course, yes, we've been through Flores and the three lakes, the three different coloured lakes, and they represent the good, the bad, and the in-between evil spirits and good spirits. And so we saw quite a few through there. And there's one island I was just trying to remember called Biak, B-I-A-K, and that's a lot of World War II history through that area as well, David. Mm. And on Biak, it was an area where the American servicemen were just on an island just off it. But on Biak, they had a huge landing strip that KLM, the airline, Dutch airline, used to use as a stop-off coming from Holland to Australia. They refuel. So there's this little island, very few people in this huge airstrip. But the Japanese had it, and they were all up in the mountains, and the American forces were out down on the beach, and they're trying to find the Japanese and where they are, and they couldn't pin them down. And then one of the local villagers said, "Oh, my dog, it got into the mountains," and I went looking for it, and it went into a cave, and I could hear all these voices in there. It sounded like Japanese. So the Americans got the bombers all ready and came across, and we went and visited the caves that had been bombed, where 5,000 Japanese were under our feet.
They bombed
the army that was hiding in the caves there in Biak, which I'd never heard about or know about. But it was a very eerie feeling to... They got the lot, nearly all of them, because they'd hide throughout the day in the cave system there, and then come out to the night and attack the armed forces on the beach. So that's a little story that sticks in my mind quite a bit. But a lot to do with World War II. In fact, over in Papua, I don't know whether you've heard of it at any time, but when the American forces were there, and there's mainly Americans, I think, and Australians, they, of course, had all these tanks and they had aircraft and they had every conceivable modern piece of equipment at the time in the 1945 period, you know? At that time, and all the local tribes, they thought when they flew in that they were all the gods, and they'd brought them all these wonderful food and cigarettes and wine and beer and, you know, you name it, that they'd never had a great deal of or any of before. Mm. So they actually started a cult. And up until a few years ago, it was a cult that used to worship them to come back again and drop all the goods off and support them.
I think it's called the cargo cult.
You've got it. Ah, right, yeah. So that's Papua New Guinea and then Papua, yeah.
Well, first saw airplanes, they just seen them in the air, they started building, as I recall from long ago, replicas of them out of bamboo or whatever. They were trying to communicate with them or, make offerings or something. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that to be correct. So that was, quite interesting. Just different because an ancient people. Some of them hadn't seen European or Westerners or modern lifestyles at all. They'd only get in the bush. Indonesia is interesting. It's Bali, it still seems to be holding up fairly well with the COVID situation. David, has it? Do you feel it's reasonably good?
Oh, yeah. It's the numbers are very low here. There hasn't been the police state trip you were talking about. I mean, they've been very serious, and there have been quarantines, and there have been, rules. But they're so loose here. The worst was when they would close the beaches. That was pointless, I thought. I mean, that's where you want people to go. If you close the beaches, you're forcing them to meet indoors. You know, they close the beaches and the parks. They haven't done that in a long time. I don't know. I mean, we've been – Katrinka came back in August. She was gone for 4 months, couldn't get back in. She came back in August of 2020. And ever since then, if we want to go out and eat, we always can. Of course, the places we're going are fairly open air. But it's serious. You know, we have apps in our, or whatever you call it. We have it's like the modern barcode, the QR code, right? Like to get into a mall here, you have to show your QR code to get into a theater, to so many things. And, mainly the people who work with tourists, dependent on tourism, which is a lot of people, have been hurting. So that's cost us a lot in terms of, feeling obligated to help people out that we know, because we know so many people in that realm. But it's been, they're very cool, you know. Everybody's so cool here.
It's great to hear that. But I suppose it also gives the benefit of going, of having their village life too, going, but they can go back to their village.
Well, people do that. Yeah.
Then it's self-supporting there as it was in the past, I suppose. They've got their pigs and fruit and veggies, and so that they can get by as a group and support each other, I suppose. Too.
Yeah.
While,
yeah.
Which, of course, in the Western, we've got to rely on friends and government, I suppose, to get us through that. Well, they can do it themselves through families and friends. Yeah. Village. Yeah.
So I want to go back to this when you're in the boat. Boats going around the islands, because you talked to me once about the effects you'd seen in the coral reefs from dynamiting, and what it was like when you first were coming and how it changed.
Yes, they'd been dynamiting for a long time, but of course over a period they had bigger boats, faster boats, and they just bombed the reefs, and we could be 300 or 100 kilometres from any island near enough, and that had habitation, and they'd go diving or snorkeling, and it's just devastated. It was just blasted so much through dynamite, and that's how they used to fish. Now it could even go more than that, David, because for the fishermen from other islands, or from it could be from other nations in Southeast Asia, if they're around reef, they can't net properly, so they can, and even fishing, but if they use the dynamite, so a lot of that could have been from international fishing. It's never specified who, what, or how, but it just shows that these areas are miles from anywhere, and they're completely devastated. And you're lucky to see small fish, let alone large ones. Now, the only way that you can really enjoy that is to find the tourist areas where they have been looking after the reefs, or alternatively, it could regenerate where they're not allowed to do it now. But basically, when they dynamite, the rocks or the reef and the corals, everything goes. It disperses it. So it'd be very hard to create a good environment for growth and multiplication after that. But no, very disappointing to see. I've dived in many places in the world and around the Australian coast, and I really expanded through the Philippines and the like as well, and it is the same in the Philippines, it's the same in the Malaysian waters, and it's the same in the Indonesian. So it's been looking for gold as fish, or fish as gold, and if it's around, they just pick it up. And, of course, they wouldn't think of the size, and then to get the fish blasting. And so it's like trying to cut down the last tree on the island, Who's going to get it? That's what it was feared like. So it was pretty devastating to see. That's what happened, wasn't it? I think on Easter Island and out through there, that they ended up having all these stone big edifices of heads and the like at Easter Island, that they'd cut down all the trees for their living and food and heating, or not eating so much as cooking.
To carry the huge statues.
Yeah, to do that as well. Yeah, right, yeah. So that's out of daily small populations now.
You know, in terms of the coral reefs coming back, there's another problem, and that is the rising ocean temperature. Without any dynamiting, is devastating coral all over the world. I see, you know, I first snorkeled here in 1992, and there was an enormous, a tremendous amount more color, life in the ocean, all this variety, color in the coral and everything. And there's far fewer fish and other marine animals swimming around, and the coral is turning gray in so many places. It's dying without any dynamiting. And coral lives in a very narrow spectrum of temperature. Now, some of it apparently is adapting, but not fast enough. It's just one of an endless list of things people are doing to commit suicide.
What's happening now, I think, is as it's changing, say down where we are in Victoria, which is very similar climate to California, particularly around San Francisco, and therefore it used to be that around the equator and the hot zones of Australia, there's giant cockroaches and these other mosquitoes that carry a few different diseases, Ross River and the like. But since the things have changed, and as you say, the oceans are starting to bleach in the north for us, being around closer to the equator, and as things are changing, but it is the insects are coming south, and so we're now getting giant cockroaches down in Victoria that were would have been up in the north of Queensland previously. We'd see them only up there. And the same thing with dengue fever. There's another one that hopefully never get. But it's starting to come down to Victoria. So things are changing in that respect. And but also, I think the only little benefit of it is that the coral reefs are now starting to form a bit further south also. Because, as you say, it's within that perimeter of zone of the warmth of the ocean. But, the Great Barrier Reef itself, it covers about, I think it's a length of about 2,000 miles. It could be 2,000 kilometres, let's say. But I think initially they were talking in miles. It runs from the north to the south. So it's one of the greatest. I think it's the biggest reef in the world.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the greatest. And it's marvellous to dive on it. And it has been a while since I've been up there. Around, I go to Cairns occasionally, which is a similar climate to Bali. But you go in the water, and there's crocodiles.
Oh, no.
Even up around to the knees, you've got to be careful. So,
I wouldn't go in, man. Jesus, horrors. You go in that water?
Well, we don't. What they do is put up big, solid wire nets, and they create like a little swimming pool within the ocean, and that's the way they do it. But it's only just the size of where you might have the lifesavers, and they'll have the flags up, and there's the wire going out from there, wire netting to be able to protect people from the crocodiles and the sharks. And so there's all this beautiful water there, and so you look at it, but most of the time you can't go in. I do a bit of cycling, as you know, as I do in Bali. In fact, just got a new electric bike and very impressed. Very impressed with electric bikes at present. You've got the feeling of a motorbike, but you're not going as fast, but you're also pedaling, and therefore getting the exercise. But then if you're going up a hill or an incline, you get the assistance of the electric bike, or alternatively, might be that, the wind's coming in from the east or whatever, and you're cycling back and you're feeling a bit tired. Well, you've got that assistance. It's a great way to get around, but enjoying that immensely.
Yeah, you cycle. You've cycled more than anybody I've met in Bali, and you're way older than some of them. How old are you?
75. I think we're about
75.
The same age.
And you've in recent years, you'll ride a bicycle from Sanur over to Ubud. You ride in Java, taking the ferry.
Been over to Java and been around Mount Bromo. That's a great mountain where you climb up to the top of it and watch the sunrise, and there's three Bromo and two other live volcanoes. And I was flying to, I spotted it. So I must go and see that. So that's a great trip to enjoy. Yeah.
I would also add to this, you're a lung cancer survivor with one lung.
That's right. The top right hand lung is taken out. You remember Sandy? He's my cycling companion over there. He lives in Bali, and he is going back on the same day as myself, actually. He's had a medical problem. He had a fall in Bali, and so he came to Australia to get fixed up. And so he'll be, Sandy and his Indonesian wife will be returning, and he's looking forward to getting out cycling again at 82. I think he's 82, and he's a very fit man.
My gosh. That is so impressive.
What can I say? Oh, she's a professor at Udiano University in Denpasar.
Is that right?
Was a professor down in Sydney University. But he still fills in and helps out at the university there as well. He's quite an interesting Scotchman. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Must introduce you to him.
I don't know if I've met him. I forget who I've met. I don't forget you because we've met a lot. But, make that happen. Do you remember how we met? Do you remember how we met?
David Chadwick. I think it was through tennis.
Right.
I think you or I approached each other in a fashion because I had a tennis racket, or you had a tennis racket.
No, you were walking by.
Maybe even on the sidewalk.
We were playing on the courts at Bali Beach Hotel, which is a massive complex. And you were walking by and came over. And, we talked a little bit. I said, hey, get your racket. Come back. And you did. And you're good.
That's it. Yep.
You're good.
That's good. And thank you, David. Yes, we all have fun there.
Yeah, and you fit right in. And, so we did a lot of tennis. I don't play tennis anymore. I stopped because I got a hernia, and it was associated with it. And the doctor told me, don't play tennis, just walk and swim. And the tennis seemed to be exacerbating it. Are you still playing tennis?
Play about three times a week, four times a week.
Oh, my God. You're an inspiration.
I love it. I enjoy a good sweat. And, Yeah, I was just wondering, how are the other guys going? At you know, you've got going back the journalist.
Elliot. Elliot.
Yeah.
Oh yep. Yeah, I was just with Elliot.
Did you jump into him, Elliot, casually?
Oh yeah, well, because we have. I go to his place with Katrinka for these wonderful events. It was a Hanukkah, and you know. He's Muhammad Elliot Cohen, because he married an Indonesian woman, right? So he had to convert to Islam, and they do all the Jewish holidays. We go there for Seder, and you know, so he's sort of a crossover, and he publishes, his spin name is Muhammad Cohen, and he's like in Fortune magazine and. I saw him in L.A. Times. Yeah, they're great. Remember Bolly Bill? He's still going strong. I don't know if he's playing tennis.
Wayudi, I think there was the Indonesian guy.
Oh, you were playing with him. Oh, he's so good. I got him playing again.
He's a good player.
Yeah, I got him playing again. Well, he's really young.
He's probably... Yeah, oh, that's right.
He's
really
young, and he's very large and strong. He used me to practice his serve. He has this cannonball serve, and I could get him back. I could try to get him back.
Oh, very good.
And I'd hit with him, and he was way better, but I could get him back, you know. Oh, God. That was fun. Uh-huh. Really nice guy. Well, it's neat.
And... it was a good crew. We all had a lot of fun there, David. So I look forward to getting back and catching up with you and Katrinka. And
I want to ask you one other thing. Can you talk about what Bali was like when you first came here and how you've seen it change? Because you first came here in '96. I was here in '92 for 2 months, and I. When I came back, I didn't recognize a lot of it. I couldn't believe I was in the same place. Ubud, that's the most dramatic change.
Yes. Yeah. I think the biggest change has been everybody coming from the village. It used to be there'd be the razzmatazz over at Kuta and around that area again.
Yeah,
now so many people come from the village. The transport, everybody was on cycles, bicycles were everywhere at the time, and then the transition. Very few people had TV. Quite a few people had galvanised iron roofs and structures that if a big wind came, that they'd be in danger. Then you'd go back a couple of years later and you'd see everybody is not on bicycles, they're on motorbikes.
Uh-huh.
And you've got still the galvanised iron roofs and the shanties are looking a bit better, but they've got TV aerials on them and big colour TVs inside.
Yeah.
And then the people are all coming down from the villages and living and working and, then they go back to the village, but the whole transition of culture started to change. But thankfully, they've still retained their religion.
And they really do.
Is holding that side of their culture together. Otherwise, they would have been, turned a lot more Western. But the transition just on goods... and then education was, everybody was going to school and then not just leaving at year six, they'd continue on, the families and the children. And then the courses that they'd be able to take, short courses that gave them the money to be able to have a better lifestyle. And then... another one would probably be health, because I think the government started giving more money towards health and education. They'd give them 2 weeks in hospital.
Yeah.
So they had 2 weeks to get well instead of dying. And at one stage there, I helped a family who would have been around about the 98. And one of their sons was about 20, and he contracted TB. And they said, oh, well, he's been to hospital for 2 weeks, I think it was. And now they sent him home because he hasn't got any money to pay for any more. And I said, what's going to happen? Oh, they sent him home to die because he can't afford the, you know, to be able to get the drugs and the remediation. So I spoke to a doctor in Sanua. His name was Dr. John Robertson, not nearly my name of Dobinson, but you know, so I remember it. But in doing so, he said, this is about 96, he said, oh, we estimate 10,000 people in Bali die every year from TB. And so here's something that, you know, in our countries was, you know, not a real problem. But there, 10,000 people from all different ages had died. So it got to the point where, I donated money for the injections and for food for 6 months. And so got to Christmas and I got information that everything's well, good as gold. And then, you know, he went on to have his own family.
Oh, good.
That was quite a thing, yeah. So that the improvements in medicine as well, and the opportunities for people to, although people I've known have died recently in the last 2 years because they couldn't get the operations that they should have had. And I find that the Balinese also, you might have something on, comment on this, they think it's God's will. They're frightened to go to the hospital and have the operations. Well, they don't want to spend it. I knew a builder, he had the money, and he said, oh, you know, I've got to need this operation. They can't do it here. I've got to go to Singapore and have it. It's going to cost $30,000. Oh, I'm not going to do that. And I thought, my God, you know, you find the money, you do it. But I felt that he had a number of houses and was a Balinese builder. He just didn't want to spend the money. So I think they accept death and as being inevitable, and if that's going to happen, well, that's God's will, instead of saying, no, I'm going to do something about this. But I think the other thing was, when I got, you know, it really upset me when I first went, we had the children around about 16, 17, that were denied having relationships because of the caste system, and in doing so, they'd get a bottle of phenol and toilet cleaner, go down to the beach and drink it, and die on the beach in others' arms. And not only one or two, but a lot of them did it. It became, if the parents did it, it became a thing to do. Like, was, you know, terrible that these young people were doing that. About 96 over in, we were over at Kuta and Legion at that stage, and they'd find these beautiful young people in each other's arms after drinking this stuff and burning out the insides of their bodies. Well, they got over that. But there is a connection there also. When the Dutch attacked in, you know, where the monument is in Sanua, where the Dutch came in on the ships and attacked Bali, When they did that, a lot of the people, you know, in response, just walked in their white robes and were shot, and many, many people were killed.
Oh, yeah.
And that was 1901, I think it was, 1903. So there is something in that culture.
It was the whole royal family did that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Of Dimpasar, of the different places, you know, there are different little kingdoms. Yeah. And there were a couple of royal families where they all just stood up against the Dutch, and you had like had like sticks, and the Dutch just mowed them all down.
Yeah, so you know, there's that little bit of that they it must. I think it's culture and religion, because the culture could even go back to the pre, like a lot of religions, that culture could even have been from the original peoples that, and they have that thing of acceptance a little bit too much, I think. And so that happened with the children.
Yeah.
Our Indian Balinese people and our friends over there like yourselves and our feeling for ourselves, the happiest times in recent years, of course, have been in Bali. And our family, our children, all know it well and enjoy the holidays there and always looking to return. So,
we're looking forward to you returning.
My word. Thank you. Same here. I look forward to you. And, hopefully both governments allow us to get there and on this particular attempt.
Yeah, I think it'll be better in February.
I think so. It's all getting better now. And as you say, the South African one is not, that's sort of pleased to hear that it's not as virile as the others or damaging. Yeah, well, when you're talking to... The boys, say good afternoon and tell them keep working on that backhand and the big serves coming through, and I'll look forward to seeing them on the return.
Yeah, okay, will do. It had been breaking up here, and we kept having to stop and start again. And right here at the end, we didn't really have a goodbye because we just couldn't understand each other anymore. I called him back and said goodbye. Well, thank you very much, John Davidson. And look forward to you coming back from Australia and paying us a visit here. So until next time, this is DC. Pooh Bob, Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sanur with Doggett Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. Sort of, except she's in America. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.